Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. It's Jason Leisure. Jason, coming up on Hallis Intrigue, we'll talk about Caleb Williams, the Bears' new stadium plan, and Ben Johnson's first day at Hallis Hall. All that and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Jason, you and I are in person, having just talked to Caleb Williams and a couple other Bears players. The Bears got to Hallis Hall on Monday for the start of their off-season program, and they're getting to meet Ben Johnson, I guess, in person. I think everybody has had phone conversations with him, but this is different. He's addressed the team and even referred to yesterday as his first day as a head coach, it sounded like. So we are full bore for 2025. What do you make of what we heard from Caleb in particular today?
I thought that Caleb continues to show that he is the right type of guy for this job.
Right.
And I just think back a lot. I kind of reference back in my mind, Pat, the image that was put forth by him, about him, not by him, but of him leading up to the draft. Mm-hmm. And all of these things that you thought, oh, is he not really serious about football, for example? So much of that has been debunked.
Yep.
From seeing this guy every day. And you look at his and you see his rookie season, he didn't play perfectly. I have no questions about his work ethic, his commitment, his objectivity about himself. I think that's a problem for young quarterbacks sometimes. And he could easily frame it this way in his mind from last year and say, oh, look at all these problems around me. This wasn't my fault. Caleb Williams he's usually pretty upbeat. I thought he was really exuberant today. Mm-hmm. About the hard work that's coming. Because it will be hard work. Ben Johnson has been saying that from the start. Right. We're going to make him do things that he doesn't normally, that he doesn't like to do or hasn't done a lot of before, isn't totally comfortable with. We're going to get him under center. We're going to put some different things in place to try to get EPA up and things like that, and CPOE and those types of things. I mean, what?
I'm already over the EPA conversation.
Okay.
It's a different way to measure quarterbacks doing well.
I like, though, if you take Caleb Williams as the person that he has shown himself to be over his first almost calendar year in the NFL, you could see where he's coming from being excited about all of this hard work, because he correctly identifies it as a necessity. Mm-hmm. It is a necessity for him to be properly coached, because to this point in his career, Patrick, he has not been properly coached.
I think you say you have no issues about his work ethic, and I don't either, in terms of time on task, in terms of he's here early and he stays late. I think there are questions about how to be efficient in doing that. And when you look at them bringing in a third quarterback this year and planning on keeping
Case Keenum
here all season long, not cutting him on cut day the way they did with their previous veteran, I think that's an admission, at least, that he's got to learn how to learn a little bit better, or a little bit more efficiently. But it's certainly not for lack of want to.
It's not a question of attitude.
Yes.
I kind of think back, when you make that point, it reminds me a lot of 20 years ago going into college.
Yep.
And I thought I was working as hard as I could my first year of college. And then my second year, I learned what really working hard looks like. It wasn't for lack of trying or lack of wanting to. So I think there's a little bit of that with Caleb Williams, where he's seen it now for a year, and he's seen where there could be more work put in. And now, like you said, he'll have Case Keenum. That's a veteran voice. But Caleb Williams throughout has been willing to do that. And he has been objective. I think I know I just mentioned this, but he has been objective about his own performance. I remember toward the end of last year, he had made a passing reference during a press conference about a notebook, keeping notes in there of things he wanted to address in the offseason about his game, things he wanted to get better at. Mm-hmm. And somebody asked him, well, what's in the notebook? And so he's just started telling us. He just said, okay, well, this is in the notebook. There was no defensiveness. There was no deflecting blame elsewhere. There was a cold, objective look at what he needed to get better at. And we know he's talented. We know he's got the physical ability. We know he's smart. I think if you add in that objectivity, that willingness to improve yourself and not pass the blame to others, I think that really sets him up to succeed in year two. And this coaching staff with this head coach, Ben Johnson, clearly more competent, clearly more capable of teaching him than Shane Waldron was.
Absolutely. And I think the fact, too, that, you know, Caleb's essentially worked with a PR person more or less since what? When did he take his first PR lessons? 15, 16?
He's a teenager. Yeah.
He's so good at communicating what he's saying that it's there's nothing that gets lost in translation. And I would say that Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky, there have been years where they're trying to say a certain thing and it comes out completely different. You're right that this new coaching staff is far better suited for him than Matt Eberflus and the offensive coordinator that he brought in last year and then fired and then promoted another guy and then Eberflus got fired and promoted another guy. This is a pairing that in a perfect world should last 10 years, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, but the Bears rarely have any coach or quarterback independently that lasts that long. But, yeah, I mean, the what's the opposite of a silver lining? Because this looks good, but the thing that I keep thinking in the back of my mind is like, man, why didn't they do this last year? Yeah. Why didn't they get this guy off to the right start at the start instead of a year in? And it will be interesting to hear Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams' opinions on what was gained in that first year being miscoached all year by being coached by a bunch of guys that got fired. The game reps help. But I really get the sense, Pat, I've really gotten the sense since the day they introduced Ben Johnson that he is going to coach Caleb Williams drastically differently and teach him totally different things. I think there will be a lot to learn. And it, you know, as far as the Bears being a good team or not in 2025, it's going to come down to, in part, how much is this really a total reset and basically rookie season all over again for him versus how much can he and Ben Johnson extract from the experience, at least, of playing 17 games and playing 60 snaps a game and seeing all these different defensive coverages.
I think both things can be true. And I talked to Ben Johnson about it last week was, you know, we talked about year two for Caleb, and the first thing he said is, whoa, this is year one with me. And it's like, okay, that's true, but also you've got a guy who's now got a Rolodex of defenses that he's seen before and that, you know, he's had a full off season. You know, at this time last year, Caleb Williams did not have an NFL job. And then everything came really fast once they drafted him, even though everybody in the world knew where he was going to end up. Yeah, I think both things can be true. I hope it's not a complete rebuild because I don't think he needs to be rebuilt from the studs here. But I do think doing it the way that Ben Johnson wants is going to be critical to this. Right?
Well, there's what Ben Johnson says. This is true of any coach. There's what he says and what he does. And we only to this point really have what he says. We don't have what he's done. I remember Matt Nagy said "be you" a lot, and then what he did was more be the you that I want you to be. Right. Things like that. So when Ben Johnson says he's going to collaborate with Caleb Williams to build an offense and tailor a new offense that is ideal for Caleb Williams' skill set, I hope that's the case. But coaches so often just fall back on what they know.
Right.
It would be so easy for a coach like Ben Johnson to say, in the end, this is really just going to be Detroit Lions 2024 offense again with you as the quarterback because that's what Ben Johnson knows.
It was the best in the league last year.
And it was successful with totally different personnel and a different quarterback, different type of quarterback too. I don't know, Pat, how much they're going to have to sit and change footwork and change timing. And when you start changing a bunch of things like that, then it starts to take a long time. Then it starts to take a while. And we're sitting there in August watching training camp practices saying, this doesn't quite look right yet.
Yeah, and I mean, at the very least, they're going to put him under center, which is something that never happened at USC or Oklahoma or really last year. And that will be something new for him to learn. A couple of the guys we spoke to today talked about Ben Johnson's first day. It sounded like he told him he wants to win and he wants to win by a lot. In April, every coach in America says that. But you could feel that some of the players definitely felt the confidence that Ben had in the first time he's ever had to address an entire team. Others, like Jalen Johnson, have lived through this before and are probably a little harder to impress.
Yeah, you got two feelings that I bet all the Bears fans feel simultaneously right now. You have Tremaine Edmonds comes in and says, oh man, when I heard him talk, I was like, okay, this guy's the real deal.
Right.
And then you hear Jalen Johnson say, yeah, I've been here before. I've heard it before. Like, let's see if we win.
Right.
Paraphrasing.
Hype don't win no games. That's a good quote.
He's, yeah, I mean, and when hasn't there been hype for Jalen Johnson leading up to a season? I think that tank year maybe was the only one where there was no hype at all. Everything else has been the hype's up here, that way up here, Pet, and then the performance is way down here.
A direct quote, I'll get excited when we start winning games in November and December.
And don't you think that's how Bears fans feel? Don't you think Bears fans feel after watching Ben Johnson as the offensive coordinator for the Lions and then hearing what he's said over the first 2 months, 3 months that he's had the job, don't you think they all feel, a lot of them feel, hey, I really, really like this guy. Also, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, and they should. I just think it's funny that asking to play competitive football in November is not a tough ask.
Not when there's seven seeds in each conference.
Yeah, and yet around here when Jalen goes, well, let's see, if we're in it in November, maybe I'll start to believe. That's so sad.
Do you think, since you brought it up, do you think that that there's any momentum as the NFL talks about an 18th game to going to eight seeds in each conference? I don't like it because I already don't like the teams a lot of times that get in as the seventh seed. Right. But when you're talking about playing competitive football in November, and they really need more teams playing competitive football, meaningful football in December, as far as inventory of games when you're trying to fill up all these primetime slots.
I think they're going to stick with seven. I also think we're coming off a year that was historic in the sense of how many awful football teams there were. I mean, the fact that the Bears went 5-12 and are drafting 10th.
That is funny, isn't it?
I mean, it's unbelievable. And I hope for the sake of the sport that this isn't the start of a trend. Because having a third of your league have five wins or fewer is not what anybody wants. And it's definitely not what our television overlords want when they need to pick out games to play in December and January.
You get toward the end of the season and you've got multiple Christmas games, multiple Saturday games. In that last weekend, you have, I think, two or three Saturday games.
Yep.
Plus a Sunday game that has to mean something.
A Sunday night game, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of inventory, and they didn't have it last year. There were some meaningless games national broadcast last year.
What do you think of the Chiefs becoming the official team of Christmas Day?
Like kind of like the Cowboys and the Lions? Is that happening?
I think they would, from what I hear, they would very much like to be.
Hmm. Makes sense. I mean, they should still be good for a while. They're one of the older historic teams.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's going to complain about watching Patrick Mahomes on Christmas Day.
I think Pat Mahomes has 10 more years, so I mean, yeah.
Yeah, unless they're so ahead that they bench him in favor of their backup for that game. Jason, one of the things I got back from the owners' meeting last week, the big takeaway, I think, in talking to Bears executives, beyond everything about Ben Johnson and kind of what they think of him, was a noted change in the way they talk about the stadium project. Namely, for 13 months, we had to hear, we're focused on downtown, we're focused on downtown, we're focused on downtown. Now they say they're focused on Arlington Heights and downtown, which I hear as we're focused on Arlington Heights. Does that surprise you, that twist there?
That's what I hear too. Yeah, it's a little surprising, just all the different back and forth from Arlington Heights to the lakefront over the last 4 years it's been now since this first came up. Around this time in 2021, guys, Matt Nagy was the coach at the time that they started talking about this, that they started moving on purchasing the land in Arlington Heights. Matt Nagy, two coaches ago, Pat. Mm-hmm. With Kevin Warren, he's a lawyer and a politician, and he's a great talker. Mm-hmm. And you really have to read between the lines on the things he says, because he probably hasn't even, I would think in his public comments, hasn't even ruled out the Michael Reese site.
He all but did the other day.
But still didn't.
Right. Let the record show, they've yet to even receive a proposal about Michael Reese. The drawings we've all seen have been drawings that they put into the ether, not even sent them directly to the Bears. Yeah. So we can all safely rule it out. But to your point,
my point is he's trying to keep all options afloat the entire time, like a lawyer or a politician would.
Right.
And it had been for a while, Arlington Heights, Arlington Heights. I think they were contractually obligated to do that. And then it was all the city, the city, the city. And now it's both. Mm-hmm. And that means that Arlington Heights has caught up to where the lakefront project was. Mm-hmm. Then you pivot to your own common sense. Mm-hmm. Which project is moving along better? Which option is moving along better and makes more sense right now?
Right.
You and tell me.
It's Arlington Heights. Arlington yeah. Heights cut them a deal on property taxes in December. I think the Bears want that deal extended as far into the future as humanly possible. But, you know, the whole reason they started looking downtown was because they thought they had, they thought that they were going to get taxed at a certain rate, and then it was higher than they thought. So, and also, you know, basic businesses, you know, having two sites kind of bidding against each other is good news. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if all, you know, if this delay ends soon and if they just start building somewhere, the Bears will have gained a little bit of something from pitting the two against each other, probably better property tax deal. Now, is that worth the 2-year wait in terms of construction costs, you know, tariffs now? I think there's a healthy debate to be had about, shoot, had you just started digging 2 years ago, February, when you got the land, would you be in a better place? I don't know. But, I mean, to me, it feels more like Arlington Heights has done more than even up with downtown. I think they've surpassed it.
Part of why you think that, I would imagine, is think back to the beginning. Think back to OTAs 2021, Matt Nagy's the coach, mm-hmm. and the Bears are moving on buying this property in Arlington Heights, the old Arlington Park racetrack. So we're not talking about renovating or replacing Soldier Field at this point. Right. We're talking only about Arlington Heights, 326 acres. Is mm-hmm. that correct?
Correct.
Tell me what you think of that idea at the time. 326-acre blank canvas, mm-hmm. pretty advantageously located transportation-wise and season ticket holder-wise.
Yeah, I mean,
you're thinking
like
what?
Sounded
you're thinking,
good.
Hey, good idea, right?
My concern was I didn't know whether the McCaskies wanted to be real estate barons. And, you know, having something that big and having to negotiate, okay, all right, hotel properties, restaurant properties, you know, everything that goes into that mixed-use idea is so much bigger than, hey, we're just going to build a stadium and put it here. I didn't know how involved they wanted to be in that. I still don't know how involved deep down they want to be in that. I think in a perfect world, I think everybody'd rather be downtown, Kevin Warren included. But it's not a perfect world. Jason, you were at the unveiling of the big plan for the downtown stadium the day before the draft last year. That gained very little momentum almost immediately.
I love the city, and I love the lakefront. I mean, everything Kevin Warren says, it's kind of bluster, but he's right. That is an incredible piece of property. That's why NASCAR wanted to have their race on the lakefront. The backdrop is incredible. But mm-hmm. what is easier to facilitate?
Right.
Building on this and this crowded area mm-hmm. in Chicago, or building the stadium of your dreams? It could literally be the stadium of your dreams, because there are endless possibilities with what you could do with that much space. Mm-hmm. Space is easier to come by in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. A town like Arlington Heights is going to be easier to deal with than Chicago. And there's just every advantage for them logistically to do this in Arlington Heights, as much as that will be tough for everybody,
right.
the Bears included, and you know, the longtime fans and people that love going to Soldier Field, even though it is one of the worst venues in the league. Everything about that makes sense, putting it in Arlington Heights.
You and I have been to every stadium, right?
Yes.
Correct?
Yeah.
Maybe the best piece of land any stadium is on, and it's not close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
Maybe a bottom three stadium that we've been to in the NFL.
The only one I think of right off the top of my head that's worse is Washington, but
right.
I mean, as a venue, if it was just you took location out of it, mm-hmm. Washington's probably worse.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah.
Lambeau Field is a far superior facility.
Oh, my God.
And not to mention, Pat, Arrowhead is, even though it's older. Arrowhead has all the parking you could ever want for your entire life. But look how many of the stadiums are new.
Yeah.
I mean,
all of them, except for the 3 years.
Atlanta replaced the Georgia Dome not that long ago, right. And the Georgia Dome had been renovated and was actually not in bad shape, in my opinion. You are competing against TV.
Yeah.
And when you are offering what the Vikings offer as a viewing experience in January, mm-hmm. all right, I'll leave the comfort of my house for that. When you think about Bears fans trying to decide whether they want to go to a Monday night game in December against the Vikings when both teams are out of it and it's going to be 10 degrees.
Right.
That's not really appealing. But you'd go to, you remember a few years ago they had Christmas Eve day.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing, I think, the Bills.
The Bills.
Home at noon on a Saturday. And that place was, those tickets were very, very gettable because it was going to be negative 10 or something. Right. Nobody wanted to do that. I don't think you ever see that again when you've got a beautiful indoor stadium in the suburbs.
Well, and you said you're competing against TV, and you're right. And then once the fans get to your stadium, you're competing against their phones.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think a dome stadium does well, believe I would rather, I mean, it's easy to say from a press box, I would rather watch a game in an outdoor facility when possible. But I think there are things you can do in terms of engaging fans indoors that you can't do outside. And, you know, and that's another big part of the appeal. One of the things, you know, it's going to be a fixed roof dome stadium either way.
You want the retractable roof. I hear you talking about, you know, you want to be at games outside when you can.
Right.
Which in Chicago, those preseason games, the September games, if all goes well, those October games, they're wonderful to be outside for.
But they're not going to do that. They're going to have a fixed roof. And they're also not going to do the slide-in, slide-out grass, which is too bad because I kind of – I mean, it's hard enough to grow grass in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm ready for the turf.
George McCaskey, when we were down there, also talked about kind of inheriting or the you know the next generation of McCaskeys and what happens now that Virginia has died. You could really feel the weight of kind of him having to hold it together, I think, when he spoke. And, you know, there's an idea that I think everybody in the family needs to be pretty united in order to follow through with the plan that Virginia set up to keep the team in the family and with the plan that the NFL long ago approved to keep the team in the family. I think that'll be interesting to watch as we go forward, especially because, you know, that private equity is now allowed in the NFL and private equity firms can buy up to 10% of a team. Kevin Warren is studying that and will present the notion of that at least to the board of directors in May. So we may not be that far away from the Bears looking to sell a chunk of the team, be it to private equity or a limited partner.
And that could play into the stadium because if you have $600 to $800 million coming in, it's a lot easier to get shovels in the ground.
I think that's how they pay for the stadium. I really do. Yeah. And one quick detail that I think is important. The pitch to Arlington Heights by the Bears was, we'll build the stadium. You guys help with the infrastructure, which is roads, sewers, all that sort of good stuff. That's not the pitch downtown.
Again, very feasible, though, in Arlington Heights.
It also gives
space-wise.
It also gives them kind of the moral argument that, hey, we're not asking you to pay for a stadium, even though we are asking you to pay for
it. It's a lawyer trick.
Yes, yeah. We're asking you to pay for a thing that will come with a stadium. That's not the argument, or that's not the pitch downtown. So part of the reason there's more momentum in Arlington Heights, in addition to Arlington Heights just being more willing to play ball, is I think the Bears are more willing to meet them halfway in Arlington Heights than they are downtown.
The place I think of when you talk about the Arlington Heights option, I mean, they want to build an expanded property and everything if they go downtown too, but it sounded more like park space than...
Yeah, good luck on the lakefront.
Than retail.
Right.
The place I always think of is, I don't know if you've been to the Atlanta Braves current stadium.
But I haven't, no.
They have kind of this village of shops and restaurants and bars outside the stadium that it really is a destination. I think everyone talks about doing that. Mm-hmm. It oftentimes doesn't really end up being that.
It's called like Battery Park or something?
That sounds right. Yeah.
How does that compare to Glendale, Arizona? Because they have, you know, a big outdoor mall next to the old hockey arena and the Cardinal Stadium. This is on a bigger scale, probably.
And better, more attractive.
Sure.
Any one of those restaurants you walk through going into the Braves game, I think they have a hotel there too, a pretty nice hotel. Every one of those restaurants, you'd be like, oh yeah, I'd hang out here for a few hours.
Right. Yeah, and that'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see whether that makes sense if you're only playing 10 games a year in a way that it would make sense in baseball.
They're going to start playing so many more games there, Pet. They are. Yeah. Final Four is going to be a regular there. Obviously, the Super Bowl would be a one-time thing for getting news. They do that for everyone. But college football, yeah. I mean, they're going to be trying to see what college, not just college football playoffs or bowl game or something. They're going to be looking at what college games they could stage there, like the Chick-fil-A early season game in Atlanta, stuff like that.
Sure.
I mean, they're going to be trying like crazy to put concert. Yeah. That's going to replace Soldier Field as the concert venue, even though it's in Arlington Heights.
If you were Illinois and Wisconsin, why wouldn't you play your football game there every year? Like, that makes a ton of sense. It's about halfway. I mean, there are a lot of different ways they can make a lot of money off of this stadium.
Yeah, it's not going to be 10 days a year.
No, no, it will not. Jason, anything else you gather? Did you gather from today in talking to players before we go?
No, sorry to let you down. It's very limited. Yeah. I mean, we hear Darnell Wright being asked about a possible move to left tackle, and he dodges it, but we don't even know if that's in play.
Depends who they draft in 2 weeks.
That was what I was going to get to, that there's still some part of this that feels premature or incomplete to me, because I think they still have significant roster needs and they still have significantly valuable draft picks at 10, 39, and 41. Those are, I mean, at 10, you hope you're drafting someone that's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
At 39 and 41, you hope you're drafting above average, maybe Pro Bowl eventually, but instant starters, guys that will start right away. So that's big spots left to fill. We want to talk about Darnell Wright moving to left tackle. It'd be a huge move. We don't even know if that's going to be in play until after the draft.
Cole Kmet, Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, all early second round picks, and I think the Bears would love two of those in this draft. I think that's maybe if not a stand-up double, maybe a legged-out triple. Like that's good work if you're drafting there.
And the draft always leaves open trade possibilities. There are certain parts of the year. It's so funny that they have all this time to make deals, but there are certain catalysts in the calendar for these deals, and the draft is one of them. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you sit here and hear rumors or consider possible, you know, speculative trade, something like, would they trade DJ Moore? Would they trade Cole Kmet? Right. Things like that sound far-fetched.
Mm-hmm.
We will find out how far-fetched they really are as we get closer to the draft. So there's so much about this that still feels early and incomplete to me, because you just don't know what the roster is. Once they've got their roster, once they've got a starting 22, a depth chart that we could all, you know, they won't give us one, but we could obviously make one once we see the roster, then we can sit here and say, this is what they've got.
I think back when they drafted Tevin Jenkins, their starting left tackle at the time was Charles Leno. They draft Tevin Jenkins in round 2. Charles Leno was cut the next day.
Shortly after.
Yeah, and he was somebody who was fairly entrenched. So these things can turn on a dime depending on who they end up with. And Jason, we will have plenty of time to talk about that as we go forward. Until then, you can follow Jason and I on social media. Check out the Sun-Times website. And if you are in town, pick up a paper. He's Jason Leisure. I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back again real soon.